Well, we are scarcely 3 weeks into 2019, but the internet has already crowned Tidying Up with Marie Kondo, a new series on Netflix, as one of the biggest sensations of the year. Like millions of others, perhaps even a few who giggled here in this church, I have watched as this slight Japanese woman brings order to overflowing kitchens, garages, sock drawers, and bookshelves all over sunny Southern California. Kondo has her clients classify every item in their teeming homes, clothing, books, paper, miscellaneous goods, and sentimental objects, and go through each one, asking, does this item spark joy in me? Those that do are kept and organized to within an inch of their lives. Those that do not are discarded, but only after being thanked. Like other shows in this genre, Tidying Up implicitly invites us to compare ourselves, our clutter, our lives, with the show's guests. And I find that this leads to an inner monologue of hearty self-congratulation. She has how many boxes of Christmas tree ornaments? Really, how many, what can one man do with 160 pairs of sneakers? That's right. But if I'm being perfectly honest, the part of the show I have found the most difficult is the whole idea of sparking joy. Forget for a moment that joy is a slippery concept to define. In a world of government shutdowns and economic hardships, of migrants and refugees, of suffering and of strife, isn't there something perverse about asking whether my socks bring me joy? Indeed, in a world marked by tragedy, shouldn't we be embarrassed speaking of joy at all? The gospel today answers such questions with a forceful no. We have just heard the account of the wedding feast at Cana from the Gospel of John. At the prompting of his mother, Jesus turns 6 stone jars used for ceremonial washings into choice wine, lots of it, somewhere between 608 and 920 standard size bottles. I did the math. This miracle is the first of 7 signs in John's gospel, actions that show Jesus to be Son of God and Son of Man. And the Cana story opens a particularly rich array of themes for our reflection: the Eucharistic overtones, the link between the earthly and heavenly banquets, filling of old jars with new wine, far too much for one homily. But probably the best interpretation I've ever heard of this passage comes not from a Bible commentary and not from a theological treatise, but from the Brothers Karamazov, Dostoevsky's famous novel. The book's protagonist, Alyosha Karamazov, has a spiritual epiphany about joy while hearing the Cana story read. And at one point he cries out, "Ah, that miracle. Ah, that sweet miracle. It was not humanity's grief, but their joy Christ visited. He worked his first miracle to help human gladness. There's no living without joy." Now, I should tell you that I have long believed that W.B. Yeats was speaking of me when he supposedly said, being Irish, he had an abiding sense of tragedy, which sustained him through temporary periods of joy. Too much talk of delight makes me uneasy and suspicious. But to say that we cannot live without joy is not to say that all of Christian life is sheer, undiluted gladness. Certainly you know that from your own lives. And Mary's presence in today's gospel is proof of it as well. She appears only twice in the entirety of the Gospel of John. The first time is at Cana, and the second is at the foot of her son's cross. One, a feast of great joy. The other, a moment of unspeakable sadness. Both real. And both of them, joy and sadness, places where Christian discipleship can be lived to the full, then and now. It is harder right now in our world, in our church, in our nation, to be a detective of joy than a detective of woe. It is also more radical and more necessary. This does not mean, this never means that we ignore suffering or pain, our own or others. By no means. It does mean, however, that they can never be the sole measure of where we put our attention. The first miracle of Christ that we just heard about worked to help human gladness, and it reminds us to be stubborn in noticing and accepting the joy that does come into our lives. Sometimes these moments are big. Usually, they are very small. And whatever their size, they are the places where happiness and gratitude meet. And they are there as often as we stop to look. On Thursday of this week, the great American poet Mary Oliver died at the age of 83. A poet who knew suffering and who knew loss, and who also knew a deep spiritual joy, one that radiates from many of her poems. She knew that these two realities are neighbors, not enemies. Not long ago, she wrote one of my favorite poems entitled, "Don't Hesitate," her brief, powerful meditation on seizing joy, even in a tragic world. If you suddenly and unexpectedly feel joy, don't hesitate. Give into it. There are plenty of lives and whole towns destroyed or about to be. We are not wise and not very often kind. And much can never be redeemed. Still, life has some possibility left. Perhaps this is its way of fighting back. That sometimes something happens better than all the riches or power in the world. It could be anything. But very likely you notice it in the instant when love begins. Anyway, that's often the case. Anyway, whatever it is, don't be afraid of its plenty. Joy is not made to be a crumb.